This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the December 26th edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. We're all dedicated here about being an above average investor and helping you make better investing decisions. That's what we talk about every day. Now, this is our 1 hour to talk about your financial planning for your retirement. That could mean simply transitioning from your job to, maybe doing what you want to do rather than what you have to do. Maybe you'll make money at that. Maybe it won't. You need financial freedom. We all need financial freedom. At some point, you're not going to be able to be an active worker. And maybe because you can't, or you get laid off or fired, no one wants to hire you. No matter what they say out there, there is age discrimination. I think that's by far the most pervasive discrimination out there is age discrimination. But, or you just don't want to work anymore. One of those three things will happen. So you need to be financially independent. Therefore, you need to make really good decisions now, saving money, investing money, help it make it grow. And you certainly can't be too conservative these days because putting money in the money market, you make less than 0.5%. You don't make hardly anything in savings account, nothing. So putting it there is you're losing money to inflation, even though inflation is very low. You're still losing money, losing buying power. So let's talk about those things. 888-99-CHART is my number. What I have for you today is index investing versus buying mutual funds. Now, don't get confused. You can buy an index mutual fund that will index, but let's talk about performances and costs and those kinds of things. That's going to be our main talking point today. Now, you'll, of course, drive the topics of what we're going to discuss. Our number is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number. So let's get to the phones right now. We try to answer your questions live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. But if you can't do that, that's okay. The number is always the same, 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Daniel in Orlando. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing well. How was your holiday?
I was pretty good. Can't complain. Thanks. I appreciate you asking about it.
No problem at all. So I was looking at Supernus Pharmaceuticals. The ticker is SUPN.
Uh-huh.
Was curious to see what you thought about the fundamentals and looking to get into a buying position.
Okay, Supernus Pharmaceuticals are out of Rockville, Maryland. It's a $1.9 billion company, so a $2 billion company, small cap. Develops specialty pharmaceuticals for the treatment of epilepsy, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorders. So that's what it does. $1.07 a share is what it's going to make this year. Then $1.49 next year. So that's pretty huge. And the growth rate is very large. Sales growth is 30 to 40, almost 50% in the last year, every quarter. So that's very good. So therefore, of course, it's a $38 stock. And it's going to make $1.49, so it's not cheap. So the 5-year range is 19 to 186, and at $1.49, it's $1.50. Let's see, 20, 30. So that means it's about a 31, 32 PE or so, and that seems high, because it is high. But the sales growth is supporting it. It's lots of sales growth here and a great return on equity, 36%. So I think that it can support a higher PE ratio, but this would be a growth stock. And, growth stocks have been very popular last year. I think it's hanging right around the 200-day moving average. So do you own it, Daniel? Do you own it or do you want to buy it?
No, not yet. And I'm looking for a long-term position. I was just looking at their sales growth and, saw that they have pretty much no debt. And, this just looks like something that could really explode as either, merger acquisition or, just something to lead into more growth into this next year.
Well, it's hanging right at the 200-day moving average, been running along it for a couple of months now. So personally, this is where you would probably step into it. Of course, you got to realize it will correct at some point, but you know, it's fallen from $48, $49 a share down to $38.95. So it's already made a correction, and the sales growth is still pretty healthy. So I think this is the way you would step into it if you wanted to buy it.
All right. I will definitely take your advice. Appreciate it.
Good luck with it. I hope it works for you, Daniel. I do think growth stocks in 2018 are going to underperform value stocks, and this is a growth stock. But you know what? Experts, including myself, we're wrong all the time. We don't know that. There's no crystal ball out there. Let's go to Kevin in Orlando. How you doing, Kevin?
Hey, Steve. Happy holidays.
Thank you, and thanks for the call.
So I have a question about taking capital losses. With the year coming to an end,
yes.
I wanted to know, how do I decide whether to sell stocks that I've taken a loss on, for example, JNUG or Teva, and how do I decide whether to get a short-term capital loss?
Okay.
First of all,
Kevin, have you figured out what your short-term and long-term capital gains are for this year?
Not precisely, but overall, I am down for this year.
Okay, so let's say you have no capital gains, short-term or long-term, this year. Then there's absolutely no reason to take capital loss if you don't want to. And in other words, you want to hold on to the stocks. Because the only time the good, solid companies you want to keep, there's no reason to sell them just to offset capital gains taxes. Now, this is the time you want to offset capital gains. And short-term means you've owned the stock 1 year or less than a year. Long-term or 1 year or longer, okay, longer than a year. Those are short-term versus long-term capital gains and losses. So whenever you do this yearly dance of I need to take capital losses, your first project is to figure out how many short-term capital gains and long-term capital gains I have. And then you go through your portfolio and say, well, which stocks do I have losses in, and do I want to offset my gains? Because remember, Kevin, you can buy back that stock that you're selling today in 31 days. You can't buy it back right away. It's called a wash through. You can't buy it back right away. But after 31 days, you can buy it back, and then you offset your gains in the last year, and now you buy the stock back 31 days later, and you're back in it if that's what you like. So that's how you kind of decide. Look at your gains first, short-term and long-term, then figure out where your losses are that you need to offset. And that's how you decide which ones you offset. And you got till the end of this week to decide that.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it. This is the Best Off, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Things to do before year end that can make a dollar difference in your tax picture. Excuse me. Have your own small business. Hold on. I got a problem here, everybody. Wonderful. Okay. Self-employed individuals who are considering their solo 401k must establish an account before year end. That's what you want. If you have a small business and you want a self-employed 401k, you got to do it before the end of the week. And heads up from InvestTalk, everybody. Have a year-end money plan question? Well, any money question is good for me. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Dave in Illinois. How you doing, Dave?
Good. How are you, sir?
Thank you for the call. I'm great.
Yeah, I was wanting to ask about AAOI, Applied Optoelectronics.
Okay.
Here lately, I've been practicing my locating resistance and support trends, and so I was wondering what you thought about this. Okay. AAOI.
Take a look at AAOI. It looks like it's been trading sideways. You saw that, right? For most of November and December, up and down, but sideways.
Right.
So that's always, we call that basing, Dave. When something comes down from a high, and this came down from, 99 or so, all the way down to 38. It was at 99 in July. And when it hit about 38, 39 area, it started to fluctuate. Okay, and that's for 2 months. It got as high as maybe 44 or so, as low as maybe 37 or so. But for 2 months, it's been going sideways. So that's called basing. Basing is a good thing because most of the time that means that the sellers are now backing off. There's no more selling into it. Well, let's look at the fundamentals. Apply to Optoelectronics, manufactures fiber optic network products for the cable TV, fiber to the home, and data center markets. It's going to make $4.56 this year. Now, it made $1.39 last year, so that was a really good number. Whenever you have a huge jump up like that, Dave, it usually might be because of an acquisition that they bought a company.
Oh, okay.
And that added to their bottom line when it's a huge jump. It doesn't have to be, but that's usually what it is. In 2008, they're only going to make $3.50, so it's going to go from $4.56 down to $3.50. Well, at $3.50, this stock is selling for like 10 or 11 P.E. It's a $38.91. So it's a really pretty, it's a value stock at that point with a lot of sales growth. And we're talking about the most recent 27% in the most recent quarter. The quarter before that was 112%. The quarter before that was 91, 60, 23, 11. So the sales growth has kind of tapered off. And that this is exactly why the stock fell off from 95, because earnings are going to go down next year, and the sales growth, even though it's still very good, fell sharply from where it was. But now you're looking at a basing stock at a pretty reasonable price. So what I would probably do, and maybe wait till it breaks above one of the moving averages, maybe the 50-day moving average, which is like about 41.50 right now. So let's say it breaks above $42, I'd be a buyer.
Okay.
That way.
Excellent. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Because what you're doing is you're looking for strength to come to the stock. You want to buy some strength. Of course, you don't want to wait till it runs up to back up to $100 a share, but you would like to buy some strength. And it's going sideways, which kind of leads you to believe, you know, that it's going to continue. It could continue to go sideways because there's nothing fundamentally wrong that I could see. And it's still at a very good price. Still growing. Interesting. 888-99-CHART. Let's look at our list of topics we're going to talk about. Index investing versus buying mutual funds. We'll talk about that. And I want to talk about, is the market going to fall in 2018? What is it going to do in 2018? I'm not going to try to predict, but I'm going to give some examples of the past. And I want to talk about the three top-ranked index funds that aren't built to handle the next stock market crash. Do you know there's different kinds of, for instance, do you know there's different types of S&P 500 funds? There's market-weighted, market cap-weighted, and equal-weighted index. Do you know what the difference are? And finally, I want to talk about home prices. Came out today, the quarterly home price survey by Case Shiller. What is that telling us? And what is the home price and home single-family home market look like for next year, 2018? If we can get to those topics, that's what I want to talk about. But, of course, you drive the show. I don't. You do. So whatever topics you want to discuss is what we're going to discuss. Everybody's talking about cryptocurrencies. And I asked some people at the office, do you know what they actually are? And there's a lot of confusion what a cryptocurrency is. Do you think that you actually can hold on to a cryptocurrency in your hand? Can you? Does it physically exist in your hand? Can you get one to physically put in your hand? Do you know the answer? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Another in heads up, you know, we're one of the best ways to reduce taxable income is through pre-tax contributions to a company retirement plan, self-employed retirement account, or maybe an IRA. You got to do it. Put money in before the year ends, guys. Well, you actually got till for the IRA before you got time, actually, before year end. You really do. You're listening to Invest Talk. Now, you all probably know by now what an index fund is. An index fund is a fund, any kind of fund that tracks an index. And an index is nothing more but a group of stocks. For instance, the Dow Industrials, it's a group of 30 stocks. It's an index fund that's been around the longest. The S&P 500 is a group of the 500 largest stocks. And that's an index of all those companies. There's the NASDAQ 100. There's a Russell 2000, Russell 5000, Russell 1000. There's a lot of different indexes, and you can buy all these indexes. You can buy the entire index through a mutual fund that tracks the index or through an ETF that tracks the index. And these indexes are constructed in different ways, and that's going to be another talking point here this hour if I can get to it. So the question is, you know, they've been very, very popular in the last few years because they get very popular in bull phases of the market. And thank goodness the market over long periods of time is a bull market. I mean, there are years and years where it's a bear market, but we have been in a bull market since 2009. And that's a long time for a bull market to exist. And we call these secular bull markets and secular bear markets. And we're in a secular bull market. They can last from the average is, the shortest one is 9 years. The longest one is 25. Both secular bull and bear. So we're at the end of the beginning of the secular bull market. That doesn't mean it's going to stop and all of a sudden become a secular bear market next year. No. Remember, it can go, the average, I think, is 18 years. So it can go for a long time. So don't worry about it yet. But when we're in a bull market, indexing becomes very, very popular because most mutual funds and money managers have a very difficult time beating the indexes. Very difficult time. And one of the main reasons is because they charge a fee. It's very difficult. Mutual funds charge a fee too. So they will have a hard time beating the index. Even all the mutual funds, even if they're tracking the index, they won't beat the index because they have a fee. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to be in the index? Do you want the risk of the market? And where a money manager such as myself comes in, where you want one, it's controlling the risk that you're exposing yourself to the market. Maybe you're looking for income. You're not just want to track an index. And when the market starts to fall, if you stay in the index long enough, you'll be just fine. You just have to stay with the index. And it may be years where it goes down. Years. Years. You know how hard it is to be patient like that? And that most people can't do it. Can't. So when it becomes a bear market, most people can't hang around. Think about 2008. When the market went down, what, 45%, tons of people got out of the market. And that is more of an emotional response. We know that. And it is common because people are emotional. It's very hard not to do it. Let's get back to the 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is the number.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Justin. It's Dom from Philadelphia. I was just wondering in hopes to de-risk my portfolio, what your thoughts are on preferred stock, and in particular, PGF, that is Paul Garrett Fred. It is a preferred ETF. Look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. Thank you.
Preferred, there's absolutely nothing wrong with preferred stocks. Preferred stock acts more like a bond than a stock because you have a particular yield it agrees to pay. And you're going to get that yield until whatever time period. Many preferreds are callable. In other words, the company can call them back when they want to. Many are not. You just have to understand how they work. They act more like a bond. And this particular issue you're talking about is not a preferred stock, but rather an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the Wells Fargo Hybrid Preferred Securities Financial Index. So you need to know what the Hybrid Preferred Securities Financial Index is. What does it do? Now, you know it's going to pay a high yield because that's what preferreds do. Remember, they act like bonds. And this one's paying about 5.3%. So a year ago, it was trading like $17, and today it's $18.88. And it's moved up slowly over this last year. So that's how they are. You got to look at them differently. And the way you look at them differently is you're looking at the income. You focus on the income. You're going to get 5.3%. Nothing wrong with that at all. If you're income focused, then this is the kind of ETF that you could buy and make a decent income on. So I don't have a problem with it. PowerShares Financial Preferred, PGF. But you got to really find out what the Wells Fargo Hybrid Preferred Securities Financial Index does. What do you mean? What do you mean by hybrid preferred? What's hybrid mean? There you're going to have to get the prospectus. Read it. Coming up on next on Invest Talk, cross these four items off your year-end checklist. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? What do you want to talk about? My direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. This is Invest Talk. It may not always be the answer you want to hear, but it'll be the straight stuff. Bring your question to Steve right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name is Vijay. I'm calling from North Carolina. I listen to your show quite often. Well, pretty much every day. I had a rather basic question about conversion to Roth IRA. What I've heard and what I've known is, you know, Roth, you pay the taxes up front, and a regular IRA, your traditional IRA, you pay the taxes when you take out the money. From what I understand, when I take out the money at age 59 and a half or 70 or whatever, the gains will be taxed at my effective income tax rate in that year. So is that correct? Because I'm 47 years old, and I hope to retire within the next, I don't know, 5 to 6 years or something. And then I don't expect my income to be at the same level. So why does it, in my opinion, I'll be better off just having a traditional IRA instead of the Roth IRA so that I don't pay the taxes at my current income level and I pay the taxes at my income level, which is, you know, whatever it'll be at that time. Could you please clarify that? I'm looking forward to listening to your response on your show tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay, in a Roth, make sure we understand this. When you talk about a Roth IRA, you only pay the tax on the money that you put in. So you're paying money, after tax money, into a Roth. That's it. Never, ever, once it's in a Roth, never, ever, 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 do you pay taxes again. You can take, when you retire, you can take it all out one day. You won't have to pay a cent on the tax. It can grow triple, quadruple, whatever it does. You can take all that money out. You never have to pay a cent in tax. There is no tax on the Roth when you take it out at retirement. No tax. None. Zero. Nada. A regular IRA, you put money in there pre-tax. You don't pay income tax on the money you put in it. So you get to deduct from your gross income for the year you put it in, the amount you put into your IRA, or your 401k for that matter. Then it grows over all the years. And when you start taking that out, you have to add that to the income in that year and pay your income tax on it. Okay? So a regular IRA, when you start taking out in retirement, you do pay income tax on it, but the thinking is you'll be in a lower tax bracket, so it'll be a lower taxes. So remember, Roth Never, ever, ever do you have to pay a tax on any other withdrawal in retirement. Ever. Okay, hope that's clear, because it's a very clear distinction between a Roth and a regular IRA. 888-99-CHARP, 888-992-4278. So what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? Well, how about home prices? The Case-Shiller report comes out every quarter. You know there's one Case-Shiller home report that comes out monthly, but there's one that comes out quarterly too, and it compares quarter to quarter to quarter. And that was up like 0.7%. But year over year, when you compare the price of that same house as a year ago, it was up 6.2% from a year ago. So that's how much prices have been going up. And it's been going up that way and will probably continue to have upward pressure on housing prices. Builders are pretty upbeat. There's a shortage of homes. There is a few headwinds, and the headwinds are getting a little bit stronger and a little bit stronger because of what's going on. For instance, you know the Fed has said they're going to raise rates next year 3 times. Well, the Fed doesn't control mortgage rates, but they do control the Fed fund rate. And that means banks have to borrow from the Fed at a higher price, so they then kind of tend to pass that along when they issue mortgages. So there's going to be upward pressure on mortgages. The price of homes, which I just told you, went up 6.2% for year over year, are getting higher, therefore reducing the pool of potential home buyers. So you got that little bit of headwind. Now the tax law, that also has a little headwind. There's a little headwind to that too. So those are your headwinds that are being faced. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. How would you like to invest in the same program as your financial advisors? You can do that, you know. You can join the KPP. We have various programs. I put the same money in the same programs for myself as I do for my client. We have shared success.
When you approach retirement, there are some complex decisions to make about your home. Sell it and downsize? Fix it up? Well, now you can have another source of answers for your real estate questions. Get a note to our onboard licensed real estate consultant. Just click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com and he'll get right back to you.
888-99-CHART. How you doing, BJ? BJ from Fremont. How's it going?
Doing good. Happy holidays, Steve. I hope you're enjoying it.
I am. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So my question today is about the international markets. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking of investing a little bit in China and emerging market. What's your opinion about that? Some of the Fidelity funds have an emerging market and China specific fund.
I'm much more comfortable in the emerging markets, BJ. They are coming around. Their markets did better than our markets this year. So the emerging markets, I'm a bit more comfortable than China. Even though I don't think, you know, you have to. When you say China, are you talking about mainland? Or are you talking about Hong Kong? Because they have ETS for Hong Kong, Taiwan.
It is China fund, actually.
China, China fund. Okay. That one's going to be a bit more risky. I'm not saying it's going to go down or anything, but it's going to be a bit more risky because China has a lot of distortions. And I just saw today that the Chinese government is coming down hard or harder on their big corporations that the Chinese government owns a majority of them, telling them they have to start making profits and quit borrowing money. And they've been, you know, they don't really have a free market there. The Chinese government, so I'm more comfortable with emerging markets because you get to spread it out and it's not just in one country. Whereas if you buy China, you're relying on China. And their growth is slowing down. I don't know. I'm a bit worried about China, mainland China.
Do you think on the same line Europe has already recovered enough? Or there's a room for further improvement there?
I think there's room for further growth in Europe. I do.
Okay.
So, okay. Thanks, BJ. Appreciate the call. Have a good New Year's. Talk to you soon. Talk to you next year, probably. Tops on our list of priorities is your call, everybody. Bring your questions to us anytime. Let's take a question from our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. Hi, all of KPP Financial. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from Kiev, Ukraine. I just wanted to say thank you for all the great advice you've given us in the past year and really, really appreciated that. And I have one last question for this year, and that would be regarding Illinois Tool Works Incorporated, ITW. I'm interested to take a position for the long term, 5 to 10 years. So what would be the price and what would be your opinion of this stock? Thanks again and all the very best. Bye-bye.
This is an old line company out of Glenview, Illinois. Manufactures plastic, metal fasteners, and fastening tools for construction and automotive and appliance markets. Been around a long time. They're going to make $7.22 next year after making $6.68 this year. That's 18% more than it was last year. So it's done very, very well. And it's still growing. Sales growth is going to be in the low single digits, 3 to 6%. And that's about as best as you're going to get out of them. It's a $57 billion company. It doesn't pay much of a dividend, 1.9. So it's the kind of company you want to buy when it's on sale. Okay, that's what you want, because it is a cyclical company, meaning it's attached to the economic cycle, and we're still in the growth phase of our economic cycle, so it should do okay to, well. But the problem you have is it was $122 a year ago, and today it's $167. So it moved up and up and up. It had a little weakness in the summertime, and then it started roaring again, and you're paying top dollar for it. The P.E. range is 15 to 27. Man, I wouldn't buy this. I'd buy it around 15. Well, if it's going to make $7.22, then I'm talking about a P.E. of like, I mean, a price of like, you know, are you going to pay $167 for making $7.22? I'd pay maybe $110, $120 a share. That's where I'd want to be. That's a low P.E. range. But looking at a chart, I would wait for it to come back to at least about $145 to $150. It's at $167. I would not chase it. You're chasing it. It's rose up really sharp. You're chasing it. Calm down. Let it come back down to you. At some point, it will. I just don't know when, and I'm not sure how far, but I'd wait. I wouldn't chase it at this price. Excuse me. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, we were just talking about index funds, right, and indexing. And do you know the difference between market weight index and equal weight indexes? Now, equal weight index means that let's talk about the S&P 500, because there is an equal weight index and a market weight index. That index right now is market weighted. The normal way people quote it and you hear about it is it's market weighted, market cap weighted, meaning the size of the company, the bigger the company, the more effect it will have on the price of the index. And that's why the FANG stocks, F-A-A-N-G, drove the index up very sharply this year. FANGs meaning Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Those are big, big companies, and the bigger the company, the more impact they have on the price of the index, going up or down. But an equal-weighted index means that all companies have the same amount of weight or power to drive the index up or down. And that did better. The equal-weighted index did better than the normal S&P 500 index. That is market cap-weighted. Did better. But the problem is it will do worse in the down market. It will do worse. So you have to understand why. Because you're waiting that, you know, even though the S&P 500, there are 500 big companies, you go from the biggest company down to the smallest company in that index. The smallest company has the same effect on the price of the index. So what would be the difference? Okay, during the bear market from October 2007 to 2009, remember the 2008 bear market, the equal weighted S&P 500 index weight version fell 3.6% more than the normal S&P 500. 3.6% more. On the upside from the bull market we've been in, how much up has it been? What is the, how much more does it perform on the upside? 2%. 2% in this most recent bull run for this year. 2%. So you're taking more risk and you're thinking, well, what's 2% up or 3% down? Well, it could be significant. And it might be a lot more painful than you're willing to handle. I just want you to understand that people wrote about for all year long how well the equal weighted index is done, and you're getting in it and you think it's a wonderful thing. Well, as long as you go in with your eyes open, I don't have a problem with it. Just know that it's going to be more volatile. It's riskier than the other market cap weighted normal S&P 500. And that's true for all equal weighted indexes. They're more risky. It's nothing more than that. And now it's a question of how much risk. Well, a swing of about 5% up and down. And that's what, at least for the S&P 500. Okay? 888-99-CHART. Here's an investing term you should know. What is the residual value? What is the residual value? The residual value of a fixed asset is an estimate of how much it will be worth at the end of its lease or at the end of its useful life. Okay? How much is it worth after end of its lease or its useful life, depending on how you're using the term. The lessor uses residual value as one of its primary methods for determining how much the lessee pays for its useful life. Think about a leased car. The residual value is what the car is worth when your lease is up. Okay? A general rule, the longer the useful life or lease period of an asset, the lower is residual value. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. If you'd like to get your question in before we're up for the day, where beginning or final segment of the day is now upon us, you have just one more segment. 888-99-CHART is our direct line, and do it right now.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Rob calling from Las Vegas. Question for you regarding a good time to sell a position. Sometimes I know a lot of investors have either buyer's remorse or seller's remorse on purchasing or selling one of their positions. Is there a disciplined way on when you guys sell part of your holdings, if it's risen by a certain percentage, or what's a good, methodology for that? On the buy side, you always hear about FOMO, the fear of missing out. I know people who have, for example, purchased Bitcoin or some of one of those holdings for $10,000 and it's gotten to $190,000 or so, and you always hear about fear of missing out. I don't want to pursue that. I think it's really speculative right now, but I guess my question leans towards the other side. What's a good way or a good disciplined way to sell some of your holdings? I'll listen for your answer on the podcast. Thank you.
Well, one way is to understand why you bought them. Write those rules down. This is why you buy. It's growing its earnings. It's got a great product. The management is good. And then when those things, something in that group changes, is no longer true, sell it. That's one way. Another way is you can use just rules that take you out automatically. Like a long-term moving average is the 200-day moving average. If the stock goes below the 200-day moving average, sell it. So you can set up rules and different kinds of methodology. There is no one way to do it. There is no one good, consistent way to get out. Because the 200-day moving average depends on how volatile the stock is. you know, maybe it will work good on a really big blue chip stock that doesn't move very much, and maybe it won't work very good on a high growth, very fast moving stock, because it'll be so far above the 200-day moving average, you'll lose all your gains by the time it broke below it to give you a sell signal, and you just... So there's different methods for different things. I wished I could tell you it's easy. It is not. Selling is a lot harder than buying. It's a lot harder. Some people make one of the most common rookie mistakes I see, it's people as they sell their flowers and water their weeds. In other words, those stocks have done really, really well, they sell them. And those stocks that have done really, really poor, they buy more of them. That's not the way you should be doing it. Okay? So, there is no one answer. I wish there was. There just isn't. And I apologize. That's about as best I can give you. If someone gives you some kind of magic wand or magic method or secret method, run the other way because there isn't any. Let's go to Dan in Palo Alto. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, Steve. Great. Listen to you every day, of course.
Great. Thank you.
1220 here. Had a quick question about General Electric. I know it's kind of a dog of the Dow.
Yep.
But I bought some last week, and I was thinking about hanging on to it.
I would.
Should I buy more?
You know the dogs of the Dow strategy?
No.
There is a strategy called the dogs of the Dow. I thought you did because you just said it was a dog of the Dow. I thought, okay, he knows that strategy. Okay, what I want you to do is go to Investopedia.com and look up dogs of the Dow. And that strategy has worked really well for 50, 80 years. And simply put, you buy the worst performing stocks with the highest dividends of the Dow. You buy them. Okay, every time, like this time of year, once a year, you buy them. You hold them for a year. Then you sell the ones, you then go and buy the dogs of the Dow again and sell the ones that outperformed. And it's a good strategy. It's worked very well. And I think GE is basing, and I think this is where, if you're going to buy GE, this is where you buy it.
Okay.
Dan, appreciate the call.
I may add something to my position.
Yeah, dogs of the Dow. Look that up. Thanks for the call.
Right.
Dan, I really appreciate the call. Thank you. Have a good new year. Time to wrap it up, everybody. A reminder, if you're not near our California offices, I can meet with you via Skype or telephone for a one-to-one retirement portfolio review. If you wish, it's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, then portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP family, I want to thank you for listening, and we can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights. Review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals.